This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, it's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation. I tell you, if you're turned off by the NCAA, which the players got paid, I think it's a great segment right here. If you think the way players are built and is unfair to players or inefficient, this is a great segment for you. The headline, why NFL's player development model could be transformed by one persistent longtime agent. Read this bad boy on CBSSports.com. The agent, Jeff, is Don Yee. Tom Brady's agent.
Oh man,
and he's a thinker. He's got ideas, and he's been in football for a long time. And for decades, he's thought about building a new way for players to be developed for the pro game. Because once you're out of college, if you aren't in the NFL, it can be very hard to get better. And as an agent, you have an interest in getting as many players as possible working for you, working under you, and, working towards an NFL career. So he's always been thinking about it. And he thought, man, if, we could just get some kind of a league going where kids out of high school wouldn't have to go to college. He's been thinking down, those paths for years. But specifically right now, a massive opportunity is developing in the world of football where the NFL is going to need talent. And for the immediate future, it's replacement players. Potentially in the longer-term future, it's draftable players. But a consistent pool of talent who's been working on getting better at football is going to be pretty important to maintain the status of football being a really, really well-played game. Even though it has its critics, it's an incredible product right now. Has to remain that way through talent. So today, Don Yee, Tom Brady's agent, announced HubFootball.com. It's a service to help players find jobs in the NFL. It has people around the NFL talking. And it pivots from an idea that he was working on shortly before the outbreak started. Don Yee was working on a league, an alternate league called Pac Pro, which was going to be out there on the West Coast. He says he was close to getting funding for this. I believe Don Yee's going to join us next week so we can get some more questions on this answered. But, yeah, he's been working on this idea of a feeder league that would be out on the West Coast, and it would offer players coaching and games, to work towards the NFL without even having to go to college. Well, now, boom, here you go, Don. The NFL needs players. They need players staying ready, and we need to keep those players away from our facility. So if there is an outbreak, this might be the perfect combination of when preparation meets opportunity, Jeff.
But doesn't that league then have to deal with the same thing that the NFL is worried about? Where it's like, okay, because what makes it different from the XFL, which just folded? That's always been my problem with the developmental league, which I think is really important. And I think the NFL just needs to subsidize it. Like, the NFL just needs to create one. But every league that tries this folds. I watched some NFL Europe and XFL, and we still have, I think, the Spring League. And I don't know. It just doesn't seem like the NFL actually looks over there and is like, oh, we need some of these players. I guess there are a few from the XFL that are in the league now.
I think the business model changes here, where instead of a TV product, NFL teams are going to, in essence, pay us, or there's a headhunting fee. There is maybe a back end when these players that play in this are represented by me and I get a portion of the contract. But from the story I read, Don, that's the word that was used. It's more of a headhunting service. Hey, you need workers. We got workers. And we're going to pair the players up with these teams. And I think the biggest component that makes it different is we don't have to make money putting these games on. If at some point our product is good enough and we're playing games and internet broadcast partners or cable TV partners want to come in and take a look at us, sure. But I think the biggest problem the XFL and the other leagues made is creating this massive overhead by playing in NFL stadiums. They say they're not trying to compete with the NFL. Well, guess what? Minor league sports just don't work on TV. You know, you're not going to get the kind of ratings to justify putting it on Fox, NBC, ESPN. You got to be on the internet, you know, like the event that happened 2 weekends ago. It was a big football camp for like 3 or 4 days for guys trying to make an impression on the league. We didn't hear about it until 4 days later. You know, you can do all of this football preparation without having to try to make billions of dollars off it in television marketing.
And the players are, and I know this, I don't, like, I guess I'm asking these hypothetically because I don't know if this information is going to all be in there, but like the players are doing this unpaid? Like they're just basically doing this hoping that an NFL team will want them at some point, or...
That's a good question for Don next week. That was not in the story.
Yeah, because no. Don's...
You're chasing
a
dream.
You're going to have overhead costs.
Yeah.
No matter what. You're going to have facilities where you're going to play. You're going to have players on rosters. You're going to have, especially if you want to, and I'm totally down with the idea of target the high school kids.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, do you not want to do the college? Well, although now college, if you're a star here pretty soon, you will be able to market yourself. So maybe that's would steal from somebody who's trying to steal from them. So I guess I'm just jaded from seeing enough football leagues pop up that don't do anything and end up folding, even with Vince McMahon money behind it, where I feel like NFL teams, they have their list of guys that they would get if somebody got hurt. They're on other people's practice squads and they steal them that way.
Yeah.
Like it's in there it's somewhere in there this works.
Uh-huh.
I think it has to come with the NFL says, here's the money. You're affiliated with us in some way.
And maybe, you know, the lasting effect of a league like this is it just makes the NCAA do things and their universities and conferences do things with developing the player first. You know, now we're going off to college and maybe my major is in football, you know. And instead of placing practice limitations on you, we're going to make your experience a lot more football-centric. And maybe a PE degree comes along with that or something. But the one of the interesting points I'm trying to make is the limitations of the college football experience for developing into a player. And if you're 18 years old, you're thinking, okay, this is great. I'm going to have to do 12 to 15 hours of coursework to try to stay eligible while only practicing 25 hours a week. Can I get access to great coaches who are just like, hey, guess what? You don't have to go to school, and we're practicing 50 hours a week. Okay, you get here, you put your hand in the dirt 8 hours a day. We're going to have you infinitely more ready than the college football system's going to put you in, and your injury risk is going down.
That's just called Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, and every other good college, right?
Is that right?
I don't know. I need to 877-881-1053 is the Autoflex Leasing fan text. If you played at a Power 5 school, did you have to go to class, or those grades kind of there for you? Let me know. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, how much can you bail out on school?
Because the best players, it'll get handled. I just wonder how far that goes.
Yeah, well, we'll have a lot of questions for Don Yee next week as well. Roy Jones Jr. revealing his Mike Tyson fight plan, Jeff, and why he's confident. Talking about the fight scheduled versus Iron Mike, and Mike saying last weekend that he only has one speed, and he can't take things like this lightly. So Roy Jones, quote, I want to box, have a good time, and give people a good show, but Mike isn't ordinary. He's not that person that can go out and do that. All he knows is take your head off. Says it's like playing with a pit bull pup. He'll play, but he'll get lost because all he knows is to go at it.
Is that an insult? Because I feel like that's just observation. Isn't that what Apollo Creed thought he was getting into with Drago? He thought we were going to have fun and dance around, and then Drago was like, and this is a documentary, so it's real. And Drago was like, nah, man, I'm here to murder you.
Yeah.
I don't feel like Mike Tyson could do a, hey, you know, it's an 8-round charity bout and we're going to spar. Tyson's going to try to knock you out.
Yeah.
So Roy Jones Jr., show up to try to knock him out, not thinking we're going to dance around the ring and have a fun spar.
Just depends on what kind of a mindset Iron Mike has right now. Somebody saying it's like playing with a pit bull pup, I would be like, huh? I'm a full-grown pit bull.
Okay.
I ain't nobody's puppy. Okay. If you're playing with me, I'm diving at your throat, bro. So I don't know. This could be a playful banner, could be a little bit of back and forth. Roy Jones Jr., 51. Iron Mike, 57 years old. I don't know. Jones only retired from pro boxing in 2018. Tyson's not had a professional fight in 15 years.
I'll have to look up who Roy Jones fought because I remember the end for Roy Jones Jr. because I was a huge fan of his. That was kind of in my – I was into boxing at that time, and he was so much fun to watch. He was like a more fun Floyd Mayweather that hit harder because it was entertaining to watch. But it was the – let me scroll down here, and I'll find exactly when it happened. But
I think it was 2010.
It was
2004
knockout,
when he lost to Tarver.
Tarver, and that was it. After the Tarver loss in 2004, like, that was it. And it was just, you're getting knocked out now.
He had to fight a bunch of scrubs late in order to pick up some victories and go out on a winning note.
Right, but that was, like, against the best guys in the world, that was kind of it. And then it was like, oh, and there went your chin. So
he got knocked through the ring by Antonio Tarver. It was like an abrupt and sudden end to Roy Jones' dominance.
I was a big
Roy Jones fan. I went and saw him at a fight. He, for whatever reason, fought at the Rose Garden in Portland, Oregon, against this British dude named Clinton Woods. Tuned him up. He did a rap concert before the show. It was only two songs.
So he was pretty confident going into that fight.
Yeah. Remember, he'd go play basketball, semi-pro basketball games, and then show up and do the boxing. Just an incredible athlete. But so was Mike Tyson. I think it's going to be Mike trying to get tough shots on him for a couple of rounds, and then Mike gets tired. And I don't know. In the end, I don't think there's going to be a tremendous amount of violence. I don't know. Guys in their 50s, could they really bring it like that and put on a show?
I want your heart. I don't know. Eat his children.
Hopefully I'm impressed, but I might be embarrassed for the two by the time the fight's over.
It is possible, but even if you're embarrassed, there's usually entertainment value. I remember the fight when I watched Kimbo Slice, and I forget the name of the other guys. Was it Dada 5000 or something like that? They fought in not the UFC, but the other one, where they would just grab names and be like, fight each other.
And by the end of
that, by the end of that fight, they were both literally dying on their feet, but they didn't have enough left in an arm to make the guys fall down anymore. And it's part really, really sad, and it's part hilarious.
Didn't Dada have like a red mohawk or something?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the Dada is wrong, but I think there was a 5,000 in there somewhere.
Oh, I think it is.
And I also think that guy is RIP, if I have it right. I don't think he's...
Kimbo Slice was a YouTube legend, a street fighting legend.
Yeah.
It was sad to watch him try to cross over into official sports. Because he was an older gentleman, but he would just whoop you in any backyard. Whoop anybody. Pull up in a giant SUV.
I bet he got a decent chunk of money out of it. Because he went on the UFC, whatever that show is called, where you have to kind of make the UFC.
And I think he did that show.
Yeah, I think he did the show twice.
Oh, good for him.
And then I think he probably made some money there in the ring.
All right, speaking of fighting, Errol Spence Jr. tweeting earlier today, done deal, the king of the division's back. November 21st on Fox pay-per-view against @DannySwift. That's Danny Garcia, #ManDown, #StrapSeason, the official champion of the G-Bag Nation's about to climb back in the ring there.
Let's go. That's going to be great.
I don't know
if I've heard from him at all.
No, we haven't.
No,
I've been laying quite low, taking some time off.
Sounds like he's ready to rock.
I assume that he's going to be fine, but who knows? You know, a car accident can have a tough impact on people, so we'll see if he's the same. When last we saw him, he was in the process of putting together one of the most impressive runs of any boxer. I mean, beating top names and at times making it look clinical and easy, precise. He is a tactician in there. He is a body snatcher in there. Mm-hmm. And we can't wait to see him get back after it and then probably, you know, have a fight in Dallas-Fort Worth again sometime real soon as well. All right, how the heck you doing today, Fish?
He's in the building!
Outstanding, boys. If you go to Fish Sports on Twitter or Facebook, you will find the just-released photos from Inside the Star. DallasCowboys.com and photographer James Smith responsible for those photos. And I know, Jeffrey, you've already had a look at them. It's really intriguing the hoops that they've had to put themselves through technologically to make the building hopefully as safe as it can be given COVID-19. There's flashing lights and red buzzers and plexiglass all over the place, and they're clearly putting in the effort in the building, Jeff.
The flashing lights are my favorite part. So obviously a lot of it's pretty self-explanatory, right? There's pictures of the meeting rooms, and there's room between chairs. Wow, crazy. Yeah. And they cover up chairs in the big stadium seating rooms, and wow, crazy. But the picture I like the best is, Gavin, they've got this board. It's like a radio board where you have the name of every player on the team and a little green light. And I guess when they're wearing their monitors, if they get within 6 feet of somebody, it'll turn red. And you'll be like, Amari!
Rip,
and,
rip,
oh,
rip.
He got too close to Looney. Okay, grab those two. Get him out of there. So, like, does somebody have to watch that all day? I don't know, but it's pretty cool looking.
Quick, hit him with the Lysol.
Yeah, and as we said the other day, each player has kind of a wristband. And in the wristband is the technology that tells you, beep, 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 red light, warning, warning, your wrist is within 6 feet of somebody else's wrist. And then, your point, Jeff, is there's some poor switchboard operators have got to sit there and look at 90 beeping lights.
Mm-hmm. And all day.
And I don't know, then what happens if they see that Zeke's beep, beep, beep? Somebody goes and runs down the hall and tackles him? I don't know. But you can understand the effort being put in, and I recognize it, and I do appreciate what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I love it, man. You know, I think that's the attention to detail that's going to be necessary to pull this thing off, Fish.
I do too, and it also takes money. Forbes has come out with its most valuable franchises. Have you guys touched on this yet today?
No.
Okay. The Dallas Cowboys, for the fifth straight year, that's never happened before. You know how Forbes magazine, they're the money magazine. They do this every year. Number five most valuable franchise in North America is the Golden State Warriors, which is
Congrats
pretty sweet.
For now.
Number four is the Los Angeles Lakers, which that makes – I get that.
Yeah.
Number two is the Yankees at $5 billion. Number one is Jerry Jones's Cowboys at $5.5 billion. Remember now, he bought them 31 years ago for $158 million. That's pretty good. Jones family, that's pretty good.
Pretty good return.
Pretty good return on your money. Jerry, by the way, the latest kind of financial gossip on the worth of Jerry Jones himself is $8
billion. Wow.
With a B. And I've always, and I've said this to his face, and then, you know, we get to a G and a Han, and it's just between us girls, and, you know, I got a twinkle in my eye when I say that. I think the Jones family has billions that they don't even know about. I think they have, for instance, land. I think they have land that they haven't even, it's going to be the wild, wild west. How the west was won. They're going to go over to their land one of those days and say, okay, well, what should we do with this land? And then Jerry's going to say, well, why don't you drill a hole in it? And the next thing you know, there's going to be oil down there. And here comes another billion. So,
or it'll be the next one, Frisco.
Well, or the next Prosper.
Yep.
This is a true story. This goes back, 25 years. This is Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders signings, and then he builds that big house way out there. I mean, way out in the country. Well, it's in Prosper. And I always wondered, why did Deion build a house in Prosper as the only resident of Prosper, whatever, 25 years ago? Well, I have a feeling that Jerry Jones probably owned all of Prosper and said, Deion, I got a nice affordable piece of land for you that's going to be quite a good investment in about 25 years. And then I have a feeling that Jerry probably told, powerful man that he is, told the telephone line people and the sewage line people, hey, why don't you go ahead and start running stuff out there because we're going to build us a town. And the next thing you know, yes, Frisco and then Prosper and then whatever is next, I bet you the Joneses own that too. But here's the funniest part of the Forbes list and maybe the most disturbing part of it. Not that there aren't Cowboy fans that are going, $5.5 billion, but where's our Super Bowl? The number three team in terms of value, franchise value, the New York Knicks.
Wow.
$4.6 billion.
Well, shouldn't we say the Cowboys kind of in that same tone? Number one, the Dallas Cowboys, where it's like, yeah, they've had success, but not real success in quite some time.
They haven't had the success that Cowboy Nation certainly wants. They haven't had the success of the other teams up there. The Yankees have had more success in that regard. The Lakers obviously have, and the Warriors obviously have. But the Knicks, Jeffrey, the Cowboys aren't the Knicks.
Oh, yeah, they are.
They're kind of close.
You think they are?
I mean, not in the last 4 to 5 years, but in the last 25?
Yeah, I don't know. I think you're being hard on your beloved Cowboys because you expect them to do more. The Knicks finish last all the time. I don't have it in front of me, but I mean the number of Knicks winning records is really astoundingly low.
But that's not the comparison. Is you're worth all of this? You remain relevant. People talk about you, even though you never win anything meaningful. You know, sure, the Cowboys' winning percentage has been higher at times.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get big-name stars, you put on a show, the media is fascinated by you. Oh, look at this, Melo and Amari Stoudemire and Allen Houston, you know.
It's and like, the Mecca.
That's not LeBron and Jordan. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's an excellent point. In that regard, the Knicks and the Cowboys are the same, is that somehow they've not – well, not somehow in the case of the Cowboys. They branded themselves brilliantly, frankly. Now, I don't know that the Knicks have done that. But we're still surfing off the idea that New York is the Mecca and the Garden is the greatest place to watch a basketball game. I don't know that any of that's even true anymore. But there's your top five with the Cowboys up top and the Knicks in third place.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the power of New York City and the population there and the media being so close. And talking about them, I think, on national programs gets pretty good ratings in New York City, which is important to them. So for a lot of reasons, they remain relevant. That has nothing to do with winning big. Okay, what else is cracking, Fish? You miss an Oxnard right now or what?
Yeah, so on your body clocks, aren't you guys? Doesn't it feel like we're supposed to be getting up at 5 in the morning and going out, walking out to the tennis court and going out to practice and Ted Nichols Payne snoring in the next room? Doesn't your body telling you, why aren't we in Oxnard? Mine sure is.
Mine's adjusted to quarantine life. Mine's like, well, here's another day.
Well, we're going to get some semblance of it. Exclusive. The Cowboys are working on, because I asked, are you going to do a glory hole press conference this year?
That's not the way you asked it. A glory hole press conference?
The annual State of the Union address.
We're going to glory hole the New York Giants ass.
That's the one. we're something like that. And, of course,
I want
me
some
Jones.
Glory hole.
Yeah. Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones and Mike McCarthy would be sitting up there for her first go-round. And then the PR czar, Rich Dalrymple, would have to sit up there close to Jerry to whisper to Jerry, okay, don't say that ever again. And for me, yeah, it's famously known as the glory hole press conference. They are going to do one, or they are planning to do one somehow, some way, sometime, in some format. Maybe that first day where we actually are on the field with practice and the veterans are actually in the building and select media are allowed in. Maybe that'll be the glory hole press conference, but there will be one. And that obviously every year, 105 through the fan, radio gold.
What else is happening, Fish?
Okay, to your beloved Mavericks. I'm not much of a must-win. Oh, it's a must-win. I don't really play that game much. But if you want to climb out of 7,
yeah,
tonight's game against Houston's pretty close. Agree?
Absolutely. All these games are going to be huge. It's 12.5% of your opportunity.
There you go. And the game against Houston is one of the teams that you have to try to leapfrog to get out of 7, making this one all the more huge. Now, it's too bad that Utah won last night. That makes them a little harder to catch for Dallas. But Houston's sitting right there, and they won't have Eric Gordon. And we still don't know. You know, they put up crazy numbers. I mean, these are two of the most prolific offensive teams in the history of basketball. In fact, I believe the combined over-under tonight is 127 points.
I bet it's over 127. I think that might be, if I had to guess, 227.
I'm sorry. That's right. You're right. 127.
Because I think they'll both score at least 70, and that'll put them way over that 127.
No, of course you're right.
Be a hell of a bet.
I think it's 127 for each team.
Oh, okay. That would be a big number. Take the under, by the way. Under hit both games yesterday.
That's a tough prediction. Yeah, that's right. It's tough to predict that guys are going to come out and be right what they were during the regular season. Especially, here's one of the things. First of all, that atmosphere last night, it was awesome, by the way. It was great. But the atmosphere is weird watching on TV. The quiet and the cardboard, yeah. Electronic fans or whatever. So imagine how weird it is for them that that's going to be an adjustment. And you guys are a couple of old basketball players, right?
Rec players.
Oh, dude, I was a baller in sixth grade. It was about eighth grade where I fell off when people learned to play.
And you couldn't just rely on your athleticism anymore?
Yeah, it used to be inbounded to Jeff and get out the way, baby. I peaked early.
Well, Jeff was dunking at 10, but for jump shooters like Gavin Dawson and myself, sight lines. That's sight line to the basket. And Gavin, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
When there's, dark behind? It really can screw you up, yeah. So how do you get used to that and how soon do you adjust? But I think that Luka Doncic tonight is going to be everything that he is almost every night.
Yeah.
And so that's I think there's an expected greatness from him, and I don't concern myself with that. I think that Seth Curry is a very known quantity now. I think he's going to come off the bench. I think he's going to score 12.6 points like he always does and be very helpful. I think Maxi Kleba is a known quantity. I know what I'm going to get from him. But what will be fascinating to watch as I bite my nails tonight because I'm MFFL, I don't know exactly what I'm going to get from Porzingis. Do you, General?
No, because he missed those two games. He's probably a guy that needs to work himself into a rhythm. I think Luka's going to be in midseason MVP form.
Yeah.
With Porzingis, it could go one way or the other. I don't know.
Tim Hardaway, I think I know, but I'm not sure I know what I'm going to get from him.
Pretty sure he'll be solid.
Dorian Finney-Smith, I know what I'm going to get defensively, but I don't know if I'm going to get anything else. Maybe J.J. Barea is a fairly known factor here. And so there's when people say he's the X factor, or he's the wild card, for me, the Mavericks have like five of them. They have like five X factors, five wild cards that are too unpredictable for me and thus adds to the intrigue of tonight.
Fingers crossed at Seth Curry. He could absolutely go off and win you a couple of playoff games. You catch him on the right night, and he can go crazy. Appreciate you as always, Fish. We'll catch up with you on Monday.
By the way, Monday morning and Tuesday morning, I am co-hosting with Sean Sharif.
Ooh, excellent. So, RJ's out, huh?
Yeah, trying to get out?
RJ's out. Yeah, he's out. Big power move by me.
Are you trying to get out of the 3-4 to the 3:15 segment?
Is that what that means?
You know, that doesn't ever work with you, Jeff.
Nope. I just tell him, listen, it's 5 hours, bro. You're in.
Take care, Fish.
I'm loyal to the G-Bag Nation.
Rest up this weekend. There he goes. Right, he's at Fish Sports, a double insider, Cowboys and Mavericks every day at 3:20 here in the G-Bag Nation. It is time for some baseball stuff every day at 3:40. We got some headlines here for you. Then I want to get into what Stephen Jones had to say about the Dak Prescott contract negotiation and where it goes from here. He updated the team's position on it yesterday with DallasCowboys.com. We have audio. Zero has harvested that audio for you. We'll get you some highlights here in just a second. But it's going to be Rangers and Giants tonight at 8 o'clock with the pregame at 7:30 with Jared Sandler. Not sure who's pitching for the Giants still. I keep hitting refresh and everything, and maybe it's out there, but it's going to be Mike Minor against a to-be-decided Rangers pitcher as far as I know. Yesterday, the Jose Leclerc story hit, though, later on in our show. Same injury as Corey Kluber, Jeff. And I was listening to Mike Bastic earlier today. He said, with some players, that injury can be a matter of pain tolerance. And I was, I was thinking that's interesting. Could it be that in a corona type of season with a lot of reasons to maybe have a half foot kind of out the door anyway, this injury could be one that maybe you just don't want to battle through? And Mike was very careful to say, I'm not reporting that that's the case with Kluber or is the case with Leclerc, but with this great of a tear, there have been pitchers who have been able to play. And there he also said there have been pitchers with less of a tear that had more pain. So it's a really tricky deal when it comes to evaluating the shoulder, and you kind of have to take it case by case.
Okay, and I absolutely trust Mike when it comes to anything to do with baseball or a baseball injury. The one thing I wonder about is because with Kluber, what they're telling us is essentially he's not going to pick up a baseball for 4 weeks, and the reason for that is because we want to see how it does and if we can avoid surgery. Mm. So when you tell me that, it would make me think if you go out there and throw, whether it hurts or doesn't hurt, aren't you upping the chances that we're going to have a surgery at some point?
Yes, that's that is a really good point.
First reaction to it.
Well, you know, who knows? Maybe it's one of those deals where it's up for interpretation. And if you're a pitcher who's fighting for your career and you do not have a sponsor, you have to impress everybody. You're like, I'm pitching through this. And if you're the Rangers and you have Corey Kluber and you're looking at this strike shortened or this Corona shortened year, you're like, we ain't winning it this year. What do you think about shutting it down and making sure you're good to go for 2021? Or with a young player like Leclerc, I think it could benefit both parties.
With Kluber, they have a team option next year for, I think, like $18.5 million. So if you're the Rangers, what are you cheering for? Like, I think I would want to see him at the end of the year, even if he's not – they've already said he's not going to be a starter. But I want to see you because the Rangers are one of the teams in baseball that their talent's starved. I need everybody I can get. And we've got a decision to make on if you are worth, to this organization, a big paycheck or a big salary. So I want to see you. I want to see if I can put you in relief 5 or 6 games and be like, all right, dude still got it. Or, all right, we're walking away from that.
Yeah, yeah. I would not want to be the person in charge of making that decision on Corey Kluber next year. It's $18 million. Last 3 times he's tried to pitch, he's gotten injured very shortly thereafter. Salute to Zero. He just sent me this note. The Rangers are unlikely to find out who's pitching tonight until they arrive at the ballpark. That's been the tactic employed by Giants manager Gabe Kapler.
What a jerk.
They'll probably face Drew Smiley or Logan Webb.
What a jerk.
Yeah, figure it out when you get here. I ain't giving you any opportunity.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think that's awesome forward thinking to do that. But I guess with most teams, you would just know because you know what their rotation is and who's up next. But if you were like, if I was going to do what a lot of people are talking about in baseball now, where it's like, oh, maybe we're going to flirt with an opener or maybe we're going to throw a bunch of relievers. I actually think that's really good strategy. When you get ready to turn in your lineup card, you don't know what it's going to look like yet because I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Wait till the last possible moment. It's not like in any other sport the other coach lets you know when his subs are coming in or anything like that. Roster moves from the account of John Blake here, Rangers news officially, Greg Bird. The first baseman and right-handed pitcher Jimmy Herget have been selected to the 30-man roster with Ariel Jurado designated for assignment. And the Major League roster is sitting there at 40 players. You are updated on what's going on with your Texas Rangers.
Oh, that's a little bit interesting to me just because I remember when Ariel Jurado was considered like somebody they had really, really high hopes for. But I guess now, at what is he, 24 now, and 2 years in a row you've given him some shots in the bigs and it hadn't gone real well. Mm-hmm. That's probably the end.
The biggest baseball story nationally, 2 Cardinals players test positive. Their games have been postponed, and it's becoming pretty clear the MLB's threshold is 2 players. That's and maybe just 1 player.
I think mine would be 1 because I would look at what happened with the Marlins. And again, we don't know, like Chris Woodward said, what protocols they did or didn't break. But I would look at it and be like, okay, if they have 1, then I need to wait a day or 2 or however many experts tell me to see if we're going to have it dormant or asymptomatic or whatever. What do you call that version of the spread?
Like the maybe, asymptomatic spread,
Yeah, maybe you haven't tested positive yet, but maybe you did get it from him and you can transmit it even though you haven't tested positive yet. So I'd be like, all right, get him out of there and give me 2 days of clean testing from everybody, and then we can play.
Yeah, the test they're using can't detect it the same day, and even a couple of days later, it's sort of 50-50. The virus really needs to take hold and mature there inside the host before it can be detected with certainty.
Gavin, the 817 says DraftKings has Logan Webb starting for San Francisco. I wonder if that's a really smart end-around. The gambling world always knows more than the general public.
They do.
Like DraftKings they got is sources. Offering, DraftKings is offering the guy to play in fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they pulled his name out of a hat.
No, and I don't think they'd declare it one way or the other because it would create no bet situations. They'd lose out money. They'd lose a ton of money if they did that. They'd rather just leave it off the board and let you pick from the players they were sure were available. So I'm taking that as confirmation, Jeff.
Okay.
The biggest story from Cowboys land, Stephen Jones commenting on the negotiations with Dak remaining unresolved. We'll talk about that here for 6-7 minutes, and then we'll get to Kevin Harlan, play-by-play man extraordinaire, coming up at 4 o'clock. He was working in the bubble last night. But, yeah, okay, so Steven said a couple of things. He said they did make progress. I'd like, more details on that, but maybe we'll get an opportunity to ask Steven more as the offseason goes on. I mean, I would just wonder if you made progress, that's going to be changed by him playing great or playing horribly. So each side, I think it's going to come back to it fresh once the season is over. I think you start over. But, heck, Steven's negotiating this stuff. It's what he does. But he said part of it in his opening paragraph was that they're talking with the union about the virus and its impact on the calf and how it did present some unique challenges. I think without a doubt, if we're having to look at maybe cutting multiple players, restructuring with multiple players anyway, adding additional money, even if it's just a couple of million dollars here or there, or going down to a 4-year contract instead of a 5-year contract, with the virus, there is extra complication with possibly losing 10% of the projected salary cap. But he said they wanted to spread things out, retain players. And if you're willing to do that with the Cowboys, you get a deal done. But I don't think you can honestly say we're making progress. And here's what Steven said. He said, we believe Dak is special, and we 110% believe we are going to get a deal done. I don't think you can say those things. I think any team, any NFL team, if you truly believe your quarterback is special, you get that deal done, and then you make everything else work around it. You don't do a Jalen Smith deal, or you restructure around it. But if you really thought the guy was special, there's no way you're in this position, is there?
No, and I think that there's no doubt a level of arrogance that goes along with being the guys that run the Cowboys, where I think they go into all these things thinking, like, well, this is fair. Like, this will work, right? We'll tell them, hey, do this, and if you do this, then we can do this, and, like, this is fair. But it doesn't matter. And Tank Lawrence was the one that I remember Steven at the podium afterwards where he had to acknowledge. He was like, it's not their job to care what the rest of the cap looks like. Like, them and their agents, their job is to get the best deal that they can get. But it just doesn't seem like the Cowboys go into negotiations realizing that's what they're going to be up against. I don't think they thought they'd get to this point without a Dak deal. And so I end up of two totally different minds on the future of Dak and the Cowboys. And one of them is, if Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones want you to be the quarterback of the Cowboys, they'll get a deal done. And the other one is math, where, like, the Cowboys could come back to the table next offseason and be like, all right, I remember where we were last time. Let's pick up right there and let's talk about this. And they're going to be like, no.
Yeah.
We're not starting anywhere near there.
Yeah.
Because of math.
The cap's way down.
The Cowboys might even try to go down.
Yeah.
And they're going to look, and Todd France is going to look at you and be like, look, that's tough.
Yeah.
But if that means you're not going to tag my guy, even in a down year, I'll have a very good starting quarterback entering the prime of his career as an unrestricted free agent. So, no, you're not getting a sweetheart deal.
Yeah.
We're not moving the number down. We're moving it way up because of what it would cost you to keep him year by year. So, I don't know how that works out, where Todd France and Dak, are they going to do a complete about-face on trying to maximize his value? Because that's the only way I see a long-term deal getting done.
Yeah. Are they going to concede that the cap came down and say, well, I guess we're taking 10% less now. Go ahead and take $3.5 million off.
It might work out for the Cowboys. It might even be intentional if they think that the cap and knew that the cap was going to go down. Because if we get a deal done before the tag deadline, what happens? On almost every contract that gets signed in the NFL, the first year is the lowest cap hit. And you spread out the bonus and the numbers go up and up and up so you can worry about it later. Well, if they had gotten that deal done this offseason, then this year's number would be lower. And next year's number would be where it starts up, up, up. Like, just in theory, let's do, for simplicity, 4 years and $140 million. If you did that and it's 35 a year, most guys the first year would count like 25. And so now we've got an extra $10 million of our yearly salary that didn't get put out there, and we got to make it up over the next three. So year two, which is coronavirus year, maybe now his cap hit is 40 to try to pay. So maybe they are setting it up. We're like, hey, if he plays well, we'll – God, they're going to have to go up a lot from what they've offered. But we could get that number lower in year one, which will now be coronavirus year.
All right, Zero, get us a little Stephen Jones audio in here talking about it.
One to use close as a term of negotiation. You either get it done or you don't. And we didn't quite get it done. I wouldn't put blame on either side. It's just one of those things when you're talking about a deal as big as this is for our team, not only for Dak, but the entire football team. You know, the ramifications that it has, it's certainly we want to get it done right. And he understands that. I know he's respectful of Jerry and myself in terms of what we're trying to get accomplished, just as we are with him.
That kind of gives you a tone. We have more audio we'll have for you a little bit later on in the show. Either they don't want to get it done, or they're totally incompetent at doing deals, or they're caught transitioning from the type of team that makes the players happy to team trying to be shrewd, and now they're sort of feeling out where the boundaries are with their agents under this new mindset. But either they don't like him, or they're really struggling to understand what the market is, because they've gone somewhere with this Dak deal now that does make the future uncertain. And their actions speak so much louder than those words. I think Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones, whoever's talking about Dak, up until the moment they force him to walk to go get market value, are going to continue to say the nicest things about it. But you got to watch the actions. And right now, those say they're either lukewarm or they're incompetent, Jeff.
I know we're very short on time here, but I just want to point out something really quickly.
Sure.
And I think this is a Jones thing, and this is a lot of the fan base thing, where it's like, all right, what if he is a 10th best quarterback? Why would you give him top five receiver money or top five quarterback money? And like, the Cowboys know how this works. You're not slotting him on how good he is with his salary. You're doing what the market does. Amari Cooper is not the second best receiver in the NFL. That's what his money is, because that's the market. The next guy up, if you're really good at your job, you get paid. So if the Cowboys try to trick you into, well, you know, if you want top three quarterback money and you're not a top three quarterback, Amari Cooper makes more money than Michael Thomas per year. Stop. That's just not how it works.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.